plays. The Great Plays series of the National Broadcasting Company presents The Swan by Ference Molnar. Your enjoyment of the Great Plays series can be greatly enhanced by your obtaining a copy of The Listener's Aid, published through the cooperation of the University Press of Columbia University in New York. Listen at the end of this program to learn how you may obtain a copy of the Great Plays Drama Guide, containing complete information about this series. The Great Play presented today is the work of the famous Hungarian playwright and author Ferenc Molnár, from whose pen came other such well-known works as The Guardsman, Lilium, and The Phantom Rival. But it remained for The Swan to bring him his greatest acclaim. For the first production of it, the French government granted Molnár the Cross of the Legion of Honor. Through the years, this delightful comedy has lost none of its charm or romantic appeal. The scene is laid in a household, a royal household, where the Princess Beatrice lives in widowhood with her sister, Simforosa, and her three royal children, two small boys, George and Arsène, and a daughter, Alexandra. There is also a royal visitor in the castle. Prince Albert from a neighboring kingdom has been an honored guest for the past 3 days. Another guest is the Princess Beatrice's brother, Carl, who some years ago forsook the regal path for which he was predestined to assume the cowl and scapulary of a more humble calling. Then, of course, there is the boy's tutor, Dr. Nicholas Agi, to whom Princess Alexandra is speaking.
Did Mother tell you that His Highness wishes to see the boy's fence after he's talked with them here?
As Her Highness desires.
I've already seen that the fencing hall is made ready. The boys are first to engage you with the foils, and then each other with the sabers.
Yes, Your Highness.
From here, His Highness will go with me to inspect my rose garden, and from there to the fencing. The visit to the garden is to occupy about 15 minutes.
I regret that Your Highness is not to have an opportunity to display her skill with the foils.
Why are you so anxious that I should fence?
Oh, I merely thought it seemed to me that since Your Highness fences with such rare skill and grace, and someone else could just as well show off, could as well escort His Highness through the garden.
Yes, no doubt.
Forgive me, Princess. It was the pride of the teacher that made me speak.
Your pride was not considered in arranging the program. In any case, please allow me to take care of it.
As it pleases, Your Highness.
Well, I am most anxious to meet this young tutor, Dr. Arge, of whom I have heard such splendid reports. Beatrice writes very enthusiastically of you, so you see I know all about you. Mm-hmm. Not only an excellent scholar, but a first-rate sportsman as well. And are you satisfied with your pupils, Professor?
Quite, Your Royal Highness.
Not Highness, only humble servant of Christ.
Oh, I beg your pardon, Father.
No need to blush about it. I'll be embarrassed myself if you do. Well, I'm sure we're going to understand each other. I compliment you on your methods, book learning, seasoned with sports. That's the right recipe.
Carl is an incurable pedagogue. He's more interested in the teacher than the pupils.
I think I understand what you mean, my dear.
Professor, if you will go now and prepare the boys for their fencing.
At once, Your Highness.
Thank you.
I came as soon as I received your wire, Beatrice. I find Albert quite changed. I saw him only for a few minutes when I arrived, but he has become quite serious, affable.
He's very sympathetic.
You have no idea how cordially he greeted me. He almost wept, threw his arms about me and kissed me half a dozen times. And so enthusiastic about his visit here. He seems to have fallen in love with all of you.
That's just it.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you mean?
Darling, would you mind going into the garden for a little?
Yes.
Well, what is it, my dear? Something has happened.
Well, I didn't wish to speak of it before her. The trouble is, nothing has happened. Albert told you how much in love he was with us all.
Yes.
In love with us all, but not with Alexandra.
But what do you expect in 3 days?
Not love, perhaps, but at least he might show some signs of interest in my daughter. He might make some advances, and there's nothing we haven't done.
Albert can't keep his heart to himself forever.
Of course not. He must marry someone. He's such a dutiful son. His mother dominates him absolutely. Carl, you know that this marriage was the dearest wish of my husband. Indeed, his great friendship for Albert's father sprang from that.
No, that sprang from his heart.
Perhaps, but he nourished it with the thought of this marriage. And now that they are both dead, the fulfillment of the dream rests with me. Oh, Carl, if I could be assured that my daughter was to have a throne, I would willingly die this minute.
There's not much of Christian humility in that wish, Beatrice.
Oh, forgive me, Carl, but after 3 days of this, I'm no longer myself. And to think we only have one more day, this afternoon and this evening, if nothing happens by that time, why, then it'll be the end of everything.
No sign at all.
Nothing at all. You may be sure I've had my eyes open.
Perhaps Alexandra...
Oh, she's beautiful and clever. Such dignity, such reserve. Her father, you know, always called her his swan. My proud white swan, he used to say. And she does impress you that way. Always proudly silent with head high. Indeed, she's quite beyond criticism. And Albert doesn't even notice her. Oh, it's enough to drive him to distraction.
Why take this so much to heart? After all, what must be will be. If you fail this time, you can try again.
When, pray? Albert is now 35, and you can imagine how anxious his mother is to have him married. And do you think Alexandra will improve with age? She's already in her 20s.
You can't help it. You're a devoted mother, and you know that in our world it is the family and not the individual that matters.
Oh.
The happiest families of royalty are composed entirely of unhappy members.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we have to reconcile ourselves to that fact, my dear. Or else make up our minds to keep out of history.
Mm, poor Alexandra.
Now, my dear, you must be calm. You who are usually so calm, so cool and collected.
Oh, Carl, Carl, do you want to see me any more nervous than I am now? This is the crisis. The moment when I have to summon up all my strength for one last desperate endeavor, and you tell me to be calm. Yes, what is it, Simferosa?
Beatrice, he's coming.
Now?
Yes, he's on his way.
Oh, let us go and meet him.
Now you stay here. Let me go to meet him.
Oh.
He, a soldier, naturally has a robust, manly cough, hearty and unrestrained. The colonel's cough is a little too startling for me. It always wakes me up with a jump. But you take Count Lutzen now. His cough has more finesse and delicacy, so that I am waked gradually and pleasantly. Strange what a difference such a little thing as a cough makes.
Yes, yes, yes.
Well.
Good morning, Albert. Did you sleep well?
Astonishingly well, Aunt Beatrice.
Oh.
I really don't know whether it's the mild climate or the spring mattress or simply the pervading atmosphere of calm and repose. I wake from my sleep as refreshed as if I'd taken a bath in warm milk. Oh, I wish I could tell you how happy I've been here these past few days. Mother, you know, has always looked upon this as an ideal retreat. And so shall I hereafter. But more than anything else, I shall remember the charm and spiritual harmony of your family life. Oh, I can only say that I'm in love with you all.
We're more than delighted that you're so enjoying your visit with us. Oh, Professor, yes, you may come in.
When I'm alone in the evening, I think of my father and your husband, Uncle Henry, and how they loved to walk together in the park.
And talk of their children.
Yes, their only thought was for the welfare of their children.
It was what they lived for. Always the children and their future. What would become of them? How someday they would have families of their own.
Evenings when I stand looking out of my window and the fragrance of the roses pouring in upon me.
Alexandra's roses.
Yes, most interesting. Now I want to know about the boys. I shall question only the tutor. Our brilliant young professor.
I can recommend him highly. He's both a scholar and a sportsman, an astronomer and a foilsman.
That's what I like, the modern spirit. And what are you occupied with at present?
With history, Your Highness.
Very good occupation. What period?
The first quarter of the last century, Your Highness.
Napoleon?
Yes, Your Highness.
Education is one of your hobbies, isn't it, Carl?
Yes.
The boys have fine eyes, I've noticed. I feel as if they could look right through me.
Alexandra has that same look. Their eyes are strangely alike.
But they shouldn't read too much.
Professor, if the boys are ready, His Highness will watch them fence. You may go.
Thank you, Your Highness.
An excellent young man, that tutor. Intelligent, yet becomingly modest. I'm delighted with him.
I took to him at once, too.
And good-looking in his way. Well, what are we to do until the fencing begins?
Well, I'm afraid you've already seen everything there is of interest. But if you care for roses, there is Alexandra's...
Oh, yes.
Alexandra takes great pride in her roses. And there are some truly remarkable specimens.
I have no doubt of it.
Perhaps Your Highness would be interested in the new dairy which I saw yesterday. It has quite a novel feature. One of the modern innovations. The cows are milked by vacuum.
By vacuum, Colonel?
Yes, Your Highness.
What a fantastic idea. We certainly must take a look at that. I've never seen anything like that. Was it you who thought of it, Aunt Beatrice?
I had it installed as an experiment.
What an astounding woman you are.
If I may say so, Albert, the dairy is some distance from here.
Oh, so much the better. A brisk walk is just what I need.
Whatever you wish. Let us go to the dairy.
Oh, no, no. I shouldn't think of troubling you. I'll go along with the Colonel. Well, let us be going, Colonel.
Yes, Your Highness.
Send someone after us when it's time for the fencing. Well, goodbye.
They dispose of the rose garden rather neatly.
Now, do you see? And you tell me to be calm. Oh, it's beyond enduring. And did you hear the Colonel? No sooner had I mentioned the roses than he brought up the cows.
It wasn't intentional, a mere coincidence.
Coincidence? Well, I know how to make use of coincidence, too.
My dear Beatrice, if you mean what I think you mean, remember that your subtle, deep-laid schemes have not always been attended with complete success.
Do you think I am one to give up while there is a ray of hope left, or a half hour of time? Oh, you'll see. Oh, it's a frightful way, but there's no other choice now.
You alarm me, Beatrice.
You may well be alarmed, Simferosa. For what I'm about to do is so unspeakable that I could never forgive anyone else for it.
Oh, dear.
The whole truth is that Alexandra has not succeeded in arousing Albert's interest. I mean, she's not appealed to his feelings as a man.
Oh, dear, oh, dear.
Well, what's the matter with that? He must have some feelings. He is a man, isn't he?
I know, but...
Furthermore, Simferosa, there are very definite limits as to what Alexandra can do. She can hardly make eyes at him.
It gives me some comfort to hear you say that.
And Alexandra simply cannot throw herself at him.
Well, what then?
Well, there's only one thing which can arouse a man's interest in a woman. The interest of another man in the same woman.
This is the unspeakable part.
Not yet. We are still talking in generalities. Go on, Beatrice.
Well, in short, Albert must be made to respond to the woman in Alexandra. All the rest will follow of itself. Alexandra is clever and open to reason, and Albert's told us he found the tutor charming.
Now, this is the interesting part.
Oh, I know what you will say, but you can't stop me now.
Yes, but what about the tutor?
We are going to invite him to the reception tonight. And Alexandra will notice him.
Oh, Beatrice.
Oh, I should never have dreamed of it if Albert himself had not suggested the idea. You remember how he praised the professor?
Yes.
Well, that's what gave me my inspiration.
Oh, dear.
To think that I should be forced to employ such an outworn stratagem. The tutor and the princess. Oh, so hackneyed. And still so effective.
Oh.
Because, you see, a rival of his own rank wouldn't bother him in the least. But when that rival is a petty tutor, then he will realize the danger.
This is more than I can bear.
You must bear it, Simferosa. Alexandra will look at the tutor, and Alexandra will dance with the tutor.
So, she may smile at the tutor, but not at the prince.
Oh, this is entirely a different thing. Why, it's just as if she smiled at a dog.
Carl, how can you calmly sit there while your sister says these terrible things?
Because it doesn't strike me as being so very terrible. Merely the customary tactics of the harassed mother. Mm. There's no reason for making such a to-do about it. No, it's not Beatrice's method that I am thinking of.
What is it, then?
I am thinking of the tutor.
Is that all? What of him?
Tell me, my dear, has Alexandra even so much as glanced at the tutor before? Has she ever smiled at him?
Well, how can you ask such a thing?
No. And has it occurred to you to wonder what will happen when the tutor suddenly discovers that his princess has become aware of his existence?
If you think he's likely to place a false interpretation on her conduct, you need have no fear. I shall take care of that danger.
Yes, I suppose you will. But the tutor is young, and being young, not incapable of fashioning dreams. Perhaps my eyes have lost their old skill in reading the face of a young man. But there was something in the way that boy looked at your daughter that I couldn't mistake. There was reverence in his look, but it was reverence not without desire.
But what of it?
What of it? Nothing, except that a brave lad like that wasn't meant to be used as a tool and then thrown away.
In other words, it is the tutor you care about.
No. Not the tutor. The man.
Oh, well, what is the difference? What it amounts to is that the happiness of your niece and the fate of our house interests you less than the feelings of this tutor.
My dear Beatrice, you have seen me in this frock so long that you no longer notice it. You know what interests me. The only thing that has any meaning for me, and that is the dignity of the human heart and the divine life which flows from it. What are your little schemes, or Albert's throne, or Alexandra's crown to me? What are they that you should sacrifice for them the peace of a man's soul. A woman who could so use a man, who could so lightly break his pride, such a woman, my dearest sister, has every reason to explain that she does so for her daughter's sake. Now, do you understand, my dear? Well, I believe I'll have a look at this vacuum machine myself.
No one shall stand in my path now. I'm calm, desperately calm, and not to be trifled with. As for my brother, Symphorosa, do not be troubled by what he said.
But
he has always his theories and no manners. If it had been left to the men of our family, we would have lost our throne in the 17th century.
I think I, too, might find some interest in the vacuum machine. Oh, here's Alexandra now.
You wish to see me, Mother? Uncle Carl said that
Yes, my dear. Alexandra, because my blood flows in your veins, there is no one in all the world nearer to me than you are. That is why you will understand me now.
Yes, Mother.
And for the same reason, which for the same thing that I do.
Yes, Mother.
And if it does not lie as near to your heart as to mine, if you do not wish for it as passionately as I do, then you must will yourself to.
Yes, Mother, but that's unnecessary, for I feel as you do about it. I know how serious a matter it is, and I understand perfectly.
We are going to invite to the reception this evening the tutor. Or rather, you are going to invite the tutor.
The tutor?
Yes, the tutor. Oh, I know what a frightful thing I've said, but your mother in this desperate extremity. Oh, my dear, bear with me. You must bear with me, because I love you so dearly.
Oh, don't misunderstand my hesitation, but I need a minute to adjust myself to the idea. The tutor is the son of a common farmer. When I think that his arm...
You will wear gloves, my child.
It's not so much the touching him that I mind, it's the thought of...
Oh, don't be ashamed to tell me what you're thinking.
Well, he is a man, isn't he?
Oh, of course.
But he might misunderstand.
Well, that's his concern.
Nevertheless, I feel I ought to be prepared to know what to do if... Well, I'm merely supposing one has to think of these things, but suppose he should feel himself attracted to me.
Is there anything to make you feel he feels this way already?
I said I was only supposing.
Oh, but you haven't noticed anything.
There are certain things one never notices.
All that you have to think of is your own goal. Towards that you must resolutely advance, looking neither to the left nor the right, but always forward.
Yes, Mother.
Your Highness, I beg to inform you that your royal sons are dressed for the fencing.
I shall proceed to the fencing hall and there wait. Her Highness wishes to speak with you, Professor.
Yes, Your Highness.
And now, my dearest child, courage. Courage.
Your Highness?
This evening there's to be some astronomical event, is there not?
Yes, Princess.
You were intending to take the boys to see it this evening, were you not?
Yes, Princess, from the observatory.
You love the stars?
Very much, Princess.
And you know all about them?
Oh, very little, Princess. But that little seems wonderfully beautiful.
You shall not watch the stars tonight.
As your Highness wishes.
We're giving a reception this evening in honor of the Prince's departure. He's leaving in the morning.
That's a pity.
Only the most important people have been invited, so there'll not be many of us. I have expressed the wish that you should be among the guests.
Aye.
It will be a somewhat formal affair. If you find the company of so many notables tiresome, please come and talk with me.
It will give me the greatest pleasure, Princess.
Then you will come.
Yes, Princess.
At nine, then.
You're most kind, Princess.
No, Professor. No, not at all.
Beatrice, seems to me that Alexandra has been sitting out there with the professor altogether too long.
Simferose, I'm so happy that for once in my life I'll admit you're right.
I am. It has gone on just a shade further than is necessary.
Perhaps in my elation over our success, I have overdone it a little. But don't let it alarm you. Well, what would you suggest doing?
For the present, it would be enough to have her leave the professor.
Yes, yes, you're quite right, my dear. Now, go and warn her to leave him.
You're the cleverest woman in all the world.
The cleverest in this room, perhaps. But there is a cleverer one outside. My daughter. Oh, how deftly she is accomplishing her purpose. Why, twice already this evening, Albert has confided to me that for the first time he has realized how truly beautiful she is.
The actress?
Well, I
motioned to her, and she got up immediately.
Good. Oh, I like it when things run smoothly. And now, dear, let us see whether they have put the mustard plaster on Arsène's throat.
What a mother you are.
Oh, there is no joy in this life comparable to a mother's.
Princess, may I escort you back to the ballroom?
No, thank you. I'm afraid you didn't understand me.
I understand, Princess. I followed you only because you stood up while I was telling you of the constellation of the eagle. I had a stupid idea I must finish the sentence I was on. I was saying that it was composed
of
seven...
That was where I stood up.
And I didn't have the sense to realize that you wished to escape.
Perhaps I did. Your stars lost their brilliance when you came to talk of them.
I'm deeply ashamed, Princess.
I expected to be told of the mystery and the beauty of them, and I hear only how many kilometers apart they are. I had no idea the Milky Way could be so dry.
I would have spoken of the thoughts with which the stars inspire me.
That might have been more interesting.
Among those far-off stars lie my thoughts of the unknown, of birth and death, life and love.
Can you conceive of such remote things?
When I look up to you, Princess.
And the unknown?
When I look into my own heart.
And do you believe in these miracles?
I must believe in them, Princess. What else could give me courage to endure my life?
Is your life then so unendurable?
If I did not have two lives, there is the life you know. But I have another life, quite apart from that. A burning, inextinguishable life.
Why have I never suspected that?
Because your Highness evidently believes in miracles, too. At least you have been able to believe that the cold expression of my face was real, even when struck.
You're struck? In the face?
Every day.
By whom? Who strikes you in the face? Do you mean that I do, without knowing it?
That's why it hurts so much.
Oh, you seem very downcast now. What has saddened you so suddenly? Is it something I ought not to hear?
I'm jealous.
Oh. And now I feel saddened. I seem to have come to the unknown of which you spoke. I feel as if I were lost among those far-off stars.
For months you have been cold and reserved towards me. Your politeness was as false as your indifference was real. And now, tonight, this evening, you suddenly begin to look at me as if I were a man, and you even speak with a little kindness.
Oh, I must make you understand now. I'm so ashamed.
Ashamed?
Oh, no, I can't tell you.
I implore you to tell me. I wouldn't ask you if I didn't see that something is troubling you, that you're struggling with yourself. Perhaps if I urge you, if I beg you, it would embolden you to speak, to open your heart, make me happy.
Oh, no, no, now you've misunderstood me again, and I'm to blame for that. This will not make you happy.
What is it?
I want you always to respect me. And I want to be at peace with myself once more. My family, that is my mother, has but one aim in life, to see me a queen, so that I may restore our family to its lost throne. Oh, Professor, cherish always this moment. Respect me for every word that I'm trying to say. For I feel as if each one were drawn bleeding from my heart.
Princess.
Prince Albert paid no attention to me. And so my mother thought that if there were another man, Albert's interest might be aroused.
Princess.
Oh, but I'm weak, and Mother knows so well how to handle me. Never since I was a child have I said no to her. It was she who suggested that I invite you here this evening.
Oh,
had I dreamed, Professor? Had I foreseen what no one could have foreseen? Or had I known how the eyes of a man can smolder when his heart's on fire? Or that any man would dare look at me as you do? Well, now I've told you everything, Professor. And there's peace in my heart again. Can't you respect me even a little for what I've done? I can thank my dear mother because without her I might never have known what it was to suffer for another's pain.
You did only what you were told.
I don't want to seem less guilty than I am. It was hateful of me to make it appear all my mother's fault. I, too, am to blame. I want to be a queen.
Why did you tell me?
Because I respect you. Did I hurt you so much?
Oh, no, it was just a box on the ear.
Would you like to punish me?
I worship you, Princess. Now I can worship hopelessly again. But have no anxiety on my account. I shall be properly submissive, and I'm quite at the disposal of your distinguished family. What better way of serving a beautiful princess with a smile on your lips, a dagger in your heart?
And it was only for your good that I told you.
You don't need me anymore. The prince has caught fire. The tutor can be extinguished.
I won't have you think that of me.
What I think will not trouble you. I shall serve in silence. Don't look so worried. Let us smile as if nothing had happened. You see, here is your prince. Smile.
What, still here?
The professor's been telling me the most fascinating things about the stars. It seems there's to be some kind of astronomical event this evening.
It really isn't much of an event, just that tonight you can observe the so-called summer stars particularly well. Capella, Arcturus, Vega, and the constellations of the Eagle. A figure formed by seven stars, which seven stars suggest an eagle in flight, and the head of the eagle...
I had no idea it was such an eventful evening.
And the head of the eagle?
I didn't know you were interested in the stars, Alexander.
I've never paid much attention to them before.
Oh, here you are. I'm afraid we've torn the professor away from his beloved stars tonight. Come in, Carl. Here they are.
Alexandra seems to be lost in the stars.
You seem in poor spirits, Professor.
On the contrary, Your Highness, this is the evening of my life.
But you appear nervous. Your face is flushed.
Well, that may be due to the unaccustomed surroundings.
Your face is flushed, my dear, but it's no matter. The color in your cheeks only adds to your beauty.
It always brings color to my cheeks, Uncle Carl, when I hear music play.
You're tired. We won't keep you.
Oh, I'm not tired, Your Highness. Indeed, I'm just beginning to feel awake.
If you'd rather go to bed.
Go to bed, Your Highness. I've just awakened. Barely 5 minutes ago.
Oh, I can see you're not well, Professor. I'll have your supper sent up to your room.
No. I'll have supper here.
Oh.
Aunt Beatrice, have you taken up astronomy too? Do you want us to stand here and starve?
Oh, I'm so sorry, Albert. Let us all sit down. Do, won't you sit down?
Yes. I've always noticed that my appetite is best at night.
Well, you're like Louis XIV in that.
The Bourbons did very well by themselves in the daytime as well. Louis the 18th once consumed 15 pork cutlets at a public banquet. Imagine what he could do in private. Does that disgust you, Aunt Beatrice? You don't seem very attentive.
Oh, not at all, not at all. I heard you, Louis the 15th and the 18 cutlets.
No, Louis 18 and cutlet 15.
And the head of the eagle, I must finish this sentence, is the star called Altair Alpha Aquilae. The star whose wonderful green light shone so brilliantly tonight.
You had a difficult time finishing that sentence.
The professor turns out to be a brilliant conversationalist with such an appreciative audience as Alexandra.
I am an indifferent talker because I have done nothing but study.
So you know too much to be eloquent?
All that I have learned must first be assimilated in my blood. It must ferment there like wine before it can give off that delicate fragrance which you call poetry. There are many things needed to startle into song the poet that's in every man.
A beautiful woman, for example.
A woman is the one thing I fear.
You're afraid of a beautiful woman? Have they such an effect on you as that?
I am too sensitive. What another man can put behind him with a laugh remains with me to fester in my soul.
Have you never let yourself be interested in a beautiful woman?
Never, Your Highness. I have studied.
Oh, come now.
That is the truth, Your Highness. I have come with one step from my books into the world. pity if I should come to grief at the start.
What a pity.
Oh, I have no fear for myself, but I have a mother, and you can understand that being an only son, I'm all the world to her. And then I have a sister, too. Oh, she's not beautiful, but she's a plucky, clever girl, and I've worked so hard for her sake. I want to see her well married. Oh, please forgive me. Now it is I who am doing all the talking.
Don't stop. I'm so interested in what you're saying.
I drink to the very beautiful daughter of the house.
That was a mighty draught.
Don't you know that one doesn't gulp down heavy wine like that?
No, I didn't, Father. I'm not used to it.
Well, let me introduce it to you with due ceremony. That is Tokay, my boy, and very old at that.
Oh, I really didn't know. To tell the truth, that's the first glass of wine I ever took.
Not really.
Yes, Father. But tonight, anything can happen.
Alexandra!
Didn't you just hear me say, Alexander, that you shouldn't drink Tokay so quickly?
I know why she drank it.
Why?
To make the professor feel less embarrassed.
Oh, but that's quite unnecessary. You never take any wine.
But tonight I do. Tell us more about your sister. I should like to know her.
She lives in Dresden.
Do you love her very much?
Very much, Princess.
That was a silly thing to ask you.
It was.
Not at all, Princess. It was just the right question. Yes, I love my sister with all my heart. Because she believes that I'm not meant to be trampled upon. That it's wrong that I should be. For to her, I'm a world in myself.
A world in yourself?
Yes, Your Highness.
How very beautiful.
But a bit exaggerated, perhaps.
No, Your Highness. I am an astronomer. And astronomy teaches you not to despise even the tiniest specks. For those minute specks in the sky are each worlds in themselves.
And these little specks, are they aware of that?
Yes. I know that's something that you rulers of the earth can hardly appreciate. You speak of 10 million inhabitants, an army of 2 million, quite as if these millions were not all sovereign worlds. Worlds that one may not destroy.
Oh, but Professor, no one here wants to destroy any of your worlds.
Women sometimes do it with a smile.
Oh.
Your Gracious Highness is looking at me very intently.
I like what you say.
And you, Your Highness, are looking at me very nervously and anxiously. Perhaps you do not like what I say.
But I'm not quite accustomed to hearing you speak in this way, Professor.
He talks very prettily, you know. That's why Alexandra is so pleased with him. Little specks in the sky. Astronomy. Worlds one may not destroy. Pretty phrases.
Not phrases, Your Highness.
Yes, phrases. Pretty phrases to impress the ladies with. Every star, a sovereign world.
Not everyone, Your Highness.
No?
No. There is that great white moon out there. It seems very bright and shines with a rather imposing splendor. And yet it has no light of its own. It only reflects the sun's rays.
How considerate of it to be so modest.
It isn't modest. Simply a great way off.
All the more reason for it to twinkle modestly.
It twinkles modestly only for you, Your Highness. But for me, who can appreciate it, it shows its true strength. And I take pride in proclaiming that it shines more brightly than the sun. And that it shines with its own God-given radiance, Your Highness. Its own.
No doubt, Professor. But it seems I do not understand these things.
No, Your Highness.
Splendid. At last, someone who dares to tell me there is something I don't understand.
Yes, Your Highness. This is something you know nothing about.
For 20 years, I've longed to be addressed in that tone. Let me tell you that as an astronomer and as a man, you have delighted me. And your manner is charming.
Oh, whether or not I have delighted you doesn't interest me.
And so frank. Charming, charming.
Oh.
What is the matter, Aunt Beatrice? Aunt Beatrice, you are ill?
Oh, my head. All of a sudden. Let me. Excuse me. Thank you, Albert. Please.
There's something the matter, Aunt Beatrice?
Will you have to excuse me? A little faintness.
Oh, you've had such a strenuous day. Let me take you to your room.
Don't you bother, Albert. I'll take care of her.
No. I insist. You stay here. Sit down, all of you. Let's not get excited. I will go with Aunt Beatrice.
There must be no confusion. So many guests in the house?
Yes, my dear. Everything will be all right. Please, I ask you all to remain here, just as if nothing had happened.
Stay here, Alexandra.
And you?
Oh, my dear sister, I love her very dearly. I have known her for 40 years now, and I have seen so many of these sudden attacks that we needn't be alarmed by them. When they come to her standing up, she sits down. When they come to her sitting down, she stands up. Well, my son, have you had enough of madness for one night?
Oh, Father.
It was my fault, Uncle Carl. I'm responsible for everything.
Gently, my dear. Let us talk quietly. As long as I am here, you needn't worry. But you're trembling. Rest your head here on my shoulder, dearest. I understand it all. I know so well how it happened.
I couldn't stand it any longer, Father. I couldn't. Heaven knows I meant to bear it in silence until tomorrow, but... Well, I'm a man and in love, Father, and I didn't know what I was saying.
I understand thoroughly, my boy.
Oh, I know it was Lee's Majesty and worse. I'm ready to answer for it to anyone. The family, the prince, with swords, cannons, whatever. But what I did, I had to do.
And so this is our earnest, serious scholar. Well, little one, what do you think of this? How do you like it?
I like it very much.
This is even worse than I thought.
That glass of wine, it's the first one I ever drank, too.
Well, you did very well for the first time.
It was for his sake, so they wouldn't make fun of him.
There, my dear. Don't cry.
You don't know why I'm crying.
Why, then?
Because I'm so sorry for him, the poor boy.
Please. You needn't pity me.
I never was so sorry for anyone in my life.
And when he looks at you, you are still sorrier for him.
When he looks at me, my face burns.
And then?
And then his eyes look into my heart. And it's as if someone had touched a piano key lightly with one finger. When he speaks to me, his voice rings through my conscience like a bell. And that hurts. Oh, I'm so sorry for him.
Oh, this is serious. Tell me, my dear, when did you begin to feel so sorry for him?
Just a little while ago, here in this room, very suddenly. Something he said.
What did he say?
I asked him if I'd hurt him so very much, and he said no. It was just a box on the ear.
So that was it.
Mother never boxed my ears. She only looked at me the way she does when I was naughty. When he said that, it suddenly dawned on me that he was a little boy once. And that when he was bad, they boxed his ears. Something old-fashioned about having your ears boxed, like being stood in the corner. And that made me see the village where he lives, the cottage with the white acacia trees around it, and his dear mother, who loved him so very much, even when she boxed his ears. What do you think of that?
I think your mother should have boxed your ears.
Oh, you dear.
See, my son, I know what women like.
Princess. Dear, gracious princess, I have forgiven you for everything.
But I haven't forgiven myself. Oh, what have we done? And poor dear mother.
Stay here, dear. It won't do any good to go to her now. Rest a while, and then we'll go together.
Your mother was very cruel.
That hurts me, too. Everything seems to hurt me. And yet I feel so very happy here. You're so sweet and so strong, Uncle Carl. How is it you understand so well?
Oh, a nice state of affairs you've got me into. Well, now I suppose I must be severe with you. This must end here. But you know that too, don't you, my children? You have far too much sense not to realize that. Oh, my heart aches for you. How can I judge you as you sit there in this hour of glorious beauty? The boy so brave and foolish, the girl so guiltless and foolish. Happier than they can ever be again. For your happiness will vanish with the night's breeze. What a sad awakening for you, you poor children. So, my dear, you had better stay here while I go and speak to your mother. I'll come back for you.
Princess?
I don't know how to begin.
And in the morning?
Oh, let the morning take care of itself. The minutes are precious now, precious for you and for me. Please.
In the morning, they will sweep me out of here like so much dirt.
And if I forbid them to?
I shall go just the same. Are you afraid of me?
I don't know. But if it is fear, then let me always be afraid.
The last hour, perhaps the last minute I can be with you. Do you love me?
Oh, don't come any nearer, please. This is the first time I've ever seen a man in love. And he happens to be in love with me.
Are you so very much afraid of me?
Frightfully, the thought of your being so close to me. Oh, how cold your hand is.
And yours is warm. What do you feel that makes it tremble so in mine?
Something that burns and...
And?
Oh, must you look at me like that? And I only want to be kind to you.
It is not kindness I want, no, not that. To look into your eyes, deep into your eyes, and then to see them close as I...
What do you mean?
And then to go on and on, never to stop, on the way which you have shown me.
Which I have shown you?
Yes, without knowing it. Oh, in my cowardice this evening, I did not dare to think I could be the rival of a king, but now...
But now...
Now we shall see who is king, he or I.
Oh, please, please.
Oh, when I said nothing, that was the time for you to be afraid.
You want to be revenged on me?
I am in love, princess, and this is the one hour of my life.
Poor boy.
No, I will not have you pity me. They will be here soon, a minute more, and then I am the disgraced servant. Will it end so? Shall I see you once more in all your proud disdain and ever after regret that I didn't carry you away?
Oh, Nicholas, the servant... Yes, what is it, Caesar?
I beg pardon, Your Highness. His Highness the Prince has just received a telegram. Her Royal Highness, the Princess Maria Dominica, is coming here. And may I take the liberty of informing you that His Highness will pass through this room presently?
Thank you, Caesar.
How lucky to find you here, Alexander. Now we can say good night. I was to have left in the morning, but now I am happy to tell you that my dear mother will be here then. But perhaps you have already heard.
I have, Albert, and I'm very glad.
Good night, Alexandra. Oh, the professor. I like what you said, and the way you said it. A little defiant, but very original. When Her Highness was taken ill, I was just about to make my modest comment. I had no idea you were such a rebel.
Albert, you're mistaken.
No, I find these astronomical outbreaks very interesting. Something new and unconventional. What I like to think of as temperament. He sat down so unobtrusively with us. And then the first thing we knew, he'd lifted us to the skies, and there he stayed, after letting me drop back to earth. There was inspiration in your words, Professor. It is very pretty. Upwards, ever upwards.
Your ridicule is unjust, Albert. He is not like us.
You defend his bad manners now with as much grace as you tolerated them a while ago. You're a brave-hearted girl, a little martyr.
Don't laugh at him, Albert. He's a scholar and a poet, an astronomer.
An ill-bred little stargazer.
Your Highness.
You're going too far, Albert. You mustn't say such a thing.
Ah, but I do.
I will not allow it when it was for my
Your
sake.
Your Highness,
I... You're a presumptuous intruder.
You!
Don't answer him, Nicholas. I forbid you to. Nicholas. Oh, there.
I beg your pardon. That is another matter. Quite another matter. In that case, I must humbly beg your forgiveness, Professor. Good night.
You must have been entertaining Albert royally, Beatrice. That's what he likes. I can imagine how much he has enjoyed himself.
Oh, he's so easily pleased.
Don't be modest. Now to business. Do I have to tell you what I'm here for?
Oh, Dominica.
In a word, your son wishes to marry your daughter.
I'm overwhelmed.
Then collect yourself. You must sooner or later make up your mind to it. His Majesty is more than pleased to approve the marriage. And I had a long wire from Albert yesterday explaining that he didn't dare to show how delighted he was with Alexandra until I came. You know, he never commits himself without first consulting me.
He's such a perfect son.
Happy the people with such a king. Albert wrote how delighted he was and how happy he could be with her.
Oh, Dominica.
I'm not surprised. Your daughter is truly beyond criticism. Beautiful, intelligent, and dignified. That's what I like about her. Her dignity. Her magnificent reserve.
No, my dear, how sweet of you to say that.
I mean it. I do not at all approve of the tendency toward freedom of manner, so noticeable in the younger generation. Fortunately, there's not even a suggestion of it in Alexandra. One couldn't ask for more perfect stateliness and aloofness. Mm-hmm. In fact, she is, if anything, a little too aloof. A little unnecessarily cold with her inferiors.
Oh, but she's changed lately. She treats her inferiors almost warmly now.
And so my husband's dream is fulfilled, for this marriage, you know,
was his one thought in life.
Yes. And I'm happy to say that whatever obstacles there were to the marriage have been removed. Albert is free to follow the dictates of his heart.
Since he was a child, I have watched over Albert as if he were already in the family.
Well. And here is Carl. Albert wrote you were here.
Oh, Dominica, I kiss your hand.
Carl, how nice to see
you.
Good
morning, Beatrice.
Good morning.
You're looking splendid, Dominica.
And you, too. You can guess what we were talking about.
So you're taking our little girl away from us, Dominica.
Yes, carrying her off without mercy. Is she still sleeping?
No, she went out early for a ride.
When may I see her?
When may you see her? Oh, my head.
Beatrice, I forbid you to faint again.
Oh.
It won't do you any good this time.
What is it, my dear?
Last night at the supper. A little faintness.
Oh, if you're really not feeling well.
Oh, she doesn't feel well, but then neither do I. However, that's no excuse for our fainting. Sit down.
What is the matter, then?
I shall tell you, Dominica.
Oh, Carl, Carl.
No, I am doing the talking now. Dominica, they say, and I know with truth, that you are the cleverest woman in Central Europe.
Oh, Carl.
Forget your modesty. You require all your intelligence. Dominica, for we have got ourselves in somewhat of a tangle, at least so Beatrice thinks. Something has happened.
Not to Alexandra?
No, but almost.
Then tell me what in the name of heaven has happened.
We couldn't help noticing it. We had to suffer with her.
We?
Her mother and I and the tutor.
The tutor?
We are coming to him now. He's the boy's tutor, a most clever, lovable young man. Well, things had come to such a pass that it, as a last resort, to provoke Albert into showing at least some signs of interest, the professor was invited to the reception. It was a stupid thing to do, but it only goes to show how extravagantly they worship your son.
What a delightfully naive idea.
Yes, wasn't it? But then something happened that was not foreseen. It turned out that the professor, this mild-mannered, earnest young scholar, was secretly in love with Alexandra.
Of course, that was to be expected.
Yes, of course. Remember that he saw Alexandra every day, so gracious and beautiful. Well, it's just the old romantic story.
And then?
Imagine the cruel sufferings of this good young man, so pitifully in love, when he discovered that his part of this innocent game was only to serve as a means to an end.
Albert is to blame. Why couldn't he speak out? There was no need for him to be so overcautious.
He did it for your sake. I don't think you know what a dutiful son you have.
Of course, it is gratifying. Well, and then?
And then so the boy sat down to supper with us, the martyr. There's no other word to describe him, this self-sacrificing martyr. And the agony he endured brought tears to my eyes.
I don't blame
him. And Alexandra, with her kind heart, couldn't bear to see him suffer either.
The poor boy.
Until Albert, who of course knew nothing of what was going on, insulted him.
How did Albert insult him?
He called him an intruder.
How awful. Why didn't you stop him?
How could I?
And the poor boy?
What could he do? He bowed his head. I thought his poor heart would break.
The brave fellow. And Alexandra?
I knew you would be sorry for him.
And Alexandra?
If you could have seen him as he stood there with his heart torn and bleeding, while Albert, in all his perfect elegance, insulted him. And this boy stood there with his head bowed, humiliated, disgraced, all because of his loyalty to his family. Now, I appeal to you as a woman. Wasn't that brave of him?
Very brave.
Does such a man deserve to be sent away?
No.
Does he deserve to be insulted, to be disgraced, to be punished?
God forbid.
Doesn't he rather deserve to be, well, how shall I say it, to be, oh, I don't know myself, but doesn't he deserve to be...
To be kissed.
Exactly what happened to him. But, oh, what a time I've had telling you.
What? What happened to him?
Just what you said. Alexandra kissed him.
Alexandra?
Yes, just as you said.
As I said?
Because she couldn't bear to see him suffer anymore. She kissed him before Albert and me.
And Albert?
Now, how could he know what it was all about? He didn't grasp the situation as clearly as you have.
As I have. Yes.
And Beatrice, with her love of convention, her idolatry of form, sits there making herself positively ill over something that Dominica finds the most natural thing in the world.
Of course,
of course. What a beautiful thing for Alexandra to have done. Oh, I'm glad that she looked at the matter as you do.
Yes, we must both bow to that girl.
A noble, brave-hearted girl. Happy the people with such a queen. So this is your terrible calamity.
Oh, you dear understanding, Dominica.
I could have told you not to have anything to do with tutors. They're about as safe near princesses as matches near a barrel of powder.
Dominica, don't you wish to see Albert?
Albert? Up so early? This is a surprise. I'll go at once.
Carl. Carl, when she talks with Albert, suppose he tells her a different story.
He won't, for two reasons. Oh. First, he's not such a fool as to disagree with his mother. And second, I shall be there.
Oh, you dear. Did I misjudge you so badly? What shall I do to be forgiven?
Anything but fall on my neck.
Oh.
And tomorrow, write in your exercise book 100 times, old brooms sometimes do sweep clean.
No manners whatsoever. Come in, Professor.
You wish to see me, Your Highness?
No, but I think Princess Dominica does. Wait here.
Yes, Your Highness. Oh. Your Highness.
You're leaving?
Yes, Princess.
And last night?
I must forget. Your Highness must deny it, and he must not have seen it.
I will not deny it, and he did see it. Seems to me you took a very precious gift from me. Perhaps a kingdom.
That is not so much. There was one offered once in exchange for a horse.
Do you want to insult me?
No, no, Your Highness. My action, my speech, my departure today, they are simply my answer to Your Highness's kiss.
I didn't ask you to use that word.
What harm to name it, when the receiving was so much more painful?
More painful than the giving?
Much more. Because I felt all the pity in it and the contempt. It was a little too condescending. It meant that I was not a man, but a child or a dog that you could pat on the head.
Was that how you took it?
If I could have taken it in any other way...
Then?
I would have returned it.
Then, in other words, it was a very stupid thing I did.
It was a little too much, Your Highness. Too sudden.
Too sudden?
We had not gone that far. But you did kiss me, and... So I went out into the park where the wind could clear my head. There my heart became quiet and I could think once more. Then I felt very much like a beggar who has had a 1,000-crown note cast into his hat and is half inclined to run after his benefactor for fear it was a mistake.
I'm glad that you now see things so clearly.
It is the morning light, Your Highness. The sun is shining.
And not the stars?
No. No, not the stars.
I'm very glad. It is well as it is.
Oh, at last I have found you. The Princess Dominica wishes to speak with you and also the prince.
The prince?
He'd be very happy if he could make amends for last night's misunderstanding.
Oh, forgive me, Father, but I would like to be excused from the interview. I'm on the point of leaving. They've put my things in the carriage.
Well, you would leave without saying goodbye?
I have just taken my leave of Her Highness.
A very strange leave-taking.
How strange?
Cold and defiant, as if I'd sent him away.
Well, isn't that remarkable? A second time he's anticipated my thoughts. You did send him away, my child, by hurting his pride and his self-respect with that condescending little kiss. That's it, isn't it, my son?
Yes, Father.
Such a tragic moment, and you talk of a kiss. And all that he said last night...
More important, the words he left unsaid. Now, my dear, how about yourself? Tell me the truth.
To tell you the truth, I think I love him a little.
I thought so, too, until you kissed him.
Do you say that, too? What do you both mean? Was the whole world turned topsy-turvy last night?
My dear, you don't know what you want. Last night, it was pity you were looking for. And at exactly 2:30, you found it in that bitter kiss.
Bitter?
Yes. I could tell... even though I didn't receive it.
Will you permit me to leave?
I marvel at your calmness, your self-control. But I know it's not real the way you're acting today. You would like to act quite differently.
Perhaps, Your Highness.
If you can be so calm now, why did you act as you did last night?
What was it you wanted then? I'm sure I don't know.
Nor do I. That was the most beautiful thing about last night. I didn't know what I wanted.
He didn't know what he wanted. And yet he went right on. He played upon my kind-heartedness, my inexperience, so that he carried me along through it all. And I was ready to go with him, even in his defiance, to the end of the world. And he... Oh, good morning, Albert.
Morning.
And he didn't know what he wanted. He only wanted to destroy things, to give way to the excitement of the moment. You called him a rebel, Albert. Well, you should have called him a rebellious child.
May I go, Your Highness?
You judge him unjustly. He is a free spirit. He is not like us.
All he wanted was to defy us, to make a scene. He had no decency.
You forget he's an astronomer.
And now I say his behavior was presumptuous.
Goodbye, Your Highness.
Then I didn't commit any terrible blunder, Uncle Carl.
That would hardly be possible to one of your exalted rank.
Then I wasn't a heroine?
No, my dear.
Alexandra, last night you righted a wrong that my weakness made me commit. I would like to ask you to stay by my side always, so that when I make a mistake again, you will be there to act as bravely as you did last night. Will you?
Albert, I must be truthful with you. If I say at this moment I feel nothing more for you than respect and friendship...
Then I will say that that is quite enough for me.
This is hardly a love match.
We have something finer. The love which comes after marriage. That deep and abiding happiness which...
Comes later and lasts longer.
Extraordinary how you can express exactly what's in one's mind,
oh,
Father.
Welcome, Aunt Dominica.
What has become of the professor?
He was here.
And?
He went away.
My daughter to be.
My dearest aunt, if you deem me worthy.
Worthy in every way, my dear daughter. But with this one word of advice. Remember hereafter that your dear father used to call you his swan. Never forget that. And think always of what it means to be a swan. You may glide proudly, superbly over the smooth surface of the lake, but you must never approach the shore. For when the swan tries to walk, when it waddles up on the bank, then it painfully resembles another bird.
A goose?
Exactly, my dear. The nature books teach us that the swan is no more than a very haughty duck. So it must stay out on the lake. Be a bird, but never fly. Know one song, but never sing it. Until the end. So for you, my dear daughter, the unruffled waters of the lake, there you must remain with your head high. Oblivious of the crowds along the shore and the song never.
And so we conclude today's presentation of The Swan by Ference Molnar. The adaptation of this play for radio was made by Richard Morinus. Featured in today's cast were Era Gerald as Beatrice, Florence Williams as Alexandra, Ian Martin as Dr. Adji, Richard Gordon as Father Hyacinth, Alfred Shirley as Prince Albert, Peggy Allenby as Simforosa, Evelyn Varden as Dominica, and William Podmore as Colonel Wunderlich. The orchestra was under the direction of Joseph Haunte. A Great Plays Drama Guide by Blevins Davis, who arranged...